Welcome to episode 2 of the Thursday Nights Roundtable. We just finished playing episode 81 of our actual play podcast.
Thursday Nights.
7 o'clock. And so today we're here with me, Greg, the DM of Thursday Nights, and
Lincoln, who plays Ren.
Sam, who plays Hugh.
And Super Kaylin, who plays Awesome Aurora.
And to start out, I just want to, let's just talk about the session we just did.
That was a whopper.
What are your thoughts on it? What'd you like? What didn't you like?
I was hit a couple times in this this session with some role playing that I wasn't really expecting and required me to kind of be on my toes, such as when Blackwood wanted to know if he could hit on Frida, which was like, I don't care. And also when we ran up against the Demon Lord at the end, because I like to play Ren as just an absolute, ever since he rolled with that epic destiny, he hates demons.
He is a devout devil follower.
And I had moments of like, well, if this was Ren, and Ren has such a hot temper and stuff like that, and he's now going up against someone he hates, he would probably just be super offensive to this person. But I had to decide whether I would rein it in for the sake of the group, or just be an all-out ass and risk combat right off the bat. And it was kind of a hard decision to make.
Stop yelling.
I think, honestly, with this one, I think you letting it out was probably okay, because combat was potentially likely, and, I mean, a lot of the times you're an ass, regardless of whether it's benefit for the group anyway. I mean, your character and all that kind of stuff. But, so I think it worked out good.
That's actually something that comes up a lot, which is when you want to roleplay your character, but you feel like the best way to roleplay your character is going to fuck the entire group.
Yeah.
Eric's old character, Orym, used to be that way. He was very headstrong, and his way was to be like, screw it, I'm going in, despite the entire group.
I'm going to pull all the cards in the deck of many things.
The entire group not wanting to do that.
We should just and let him go into the void.
It's probably, I mean, I don't really get that, because I get to do whatever I want. But
well, it's fun to do it every once in a while. I'm not going to lie. When you just go, and the rest of the group's like, what the hell?
Yeah, like when I killed,
Yeah, when you killed
even Mark. Aurora. Yeah, kind, yeah, gentle Aurora.
Well, gentle.
Not gentle.
Not so much.
But,
kind, also not so much.
Well, you know, benevolent Aurora.
Yeah. Benevolent. I'll roll with
when
that.
When she killed Lurd back in the...
Who totally deserved it.
And the rest of us were like,
they wanted to, like, talk to him or do something with him.
What, redeem him?
And you just buried your hammer in him. But that's what I'm saying, is that sometimes it's fun, and it's fun to do that with your character, and it's fun to just let it out like that. But you have to rein it in sometimes, in my opinion. If you're like Orym, who just did it all the time, then it's like, well, this is kind of the Orym show, and we're just here for the ride. Which isn't, I mean, that's not how it was, but it can start to feel like that.
It can feel like that.
That's absolutely true, and you do have to be careful, too. And they call it, in the DMG, I think they call it the instigator.
Yeah.
They have they have all the different, like, player personality types, and the instigator is the guy that, he just wants stuff to be happening, and if something's not happening right now, he'll make it happen. That's more of a player archetype rather than
Eric,
character. Well, but you know, he doesn't. It's Eric to some degree, but he. Whereas Orym, his old character, did it a lot.
He acted on it. I would say Eric.
Dailman will express his opinion in kind of that same way, like, "Hey, I want to get going, want to do something."
He'll also start getting antsy and eventually do something if you
don't
do it.
Yeah, but he'll certainly give the group more of an opportunity to
thank God.
Make the decision.
Yeah.
Unless it's a wrath, and then we're all just...
Well, like many of the personality types in the book, you have to make sure that you're playing your personality type in a way that's still compatible with everybody else having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think we have a nice balance of, but it's certainly something...
It just takes
something,
nice people.
Yeah. Well, it takes you going, okay, here's how I think Ren might act. How can I roleplay this in a way that feels like I'm role-playing him satisfactorily, which you kind of did. You
true
said, like,
character.
It's taking all of Ren's... Yeah, you want to be true to your character, but still make sure that the group doesn't feel like they're watching the Ren show because Ren's just dominating everything. Like if Daemon said, I want to go explore these other rooms, and Ren's like, screw it, I'm going to move all the crystals and do it right now.
Yeah.
It'd be the same thing. You want everyone to feel like they're playing the game.
And that's kind of what I did with the crystals too. I mean, I was like, dude, freak you guys, I want to move these things. So I moved them, but I purposely didn't just go like fire off energy into it or anything. I was like, I'm going to move these. And it's kind of like loading the gun and see what happens.
I'm touching the
crystal.
Yeah.
So
it's about striking that balance of playing your character, being true to your character, but making sure that that's not reducing the fun of the other players. Yeah. Because it's everyone's responsibility, the DM most of all, but it's everyone's responsibility to make a game, make a social game that we're playing fun for everybody.
Yeah.
A lot of the onus falls on the DM to make sure if I were to notice, you know, you being an instigator so much that it seems like other players aren't getting a chance to really have a say in anything, I would probably pull you aside and be like, look, this is what's happening. How can we make sure that you're still playing your character, but, you know, we need to help with the friends, or we need to help with the fun of the other players.
Yeah.
So, and that's, you know, it's a thing with every group, making sure everyone's having fun.
So getting back to the original topic of,
what we like in the...
I was just talking about this session.
Ah.
Yeah.
Did you have something to say?
No, I was just refocusing.
Oh, okay.
I'm gonna cut this all out, so after dinner.
Was there anything else in this session that was... Well, let's talk about... Okay,
the puzzle mechanics were a little bit slow to work out.
Yes, okay, let's talk about puzzle mechanics. I definitely wanted to talk about this for a while. So, I'm gonna go back in time a little bit to a session we had maybe four sessions back where I built a... The long story short is I built a tower defense mechanic on top of combat. Now, my design inspiration for this was, okay, I want, you know, as I always do with combat, how can I make this combat a little bit different from other things? And I thought, well, how about tower defense? Like, that's a cool game that is tried and true. You know, mm-hmm. It's fun to build defenses and have them defeat an oncoming thing. But I didn't want to just make a tower defense game, so I did what we often do in D&D, which is build it into encounter mechanics. So I came up with all these different things that you can do as minor actions to construct towers that could do different things, and basically gave you all the tools you needed for it to be a tower defense thing. And what happened was our combat was split into two sessions. In the entire first session, you guys used the tower defense mechanics almost not at all.
Like, we made, like, two.
Like, you made, like, two towers, and when I talked to you afterwards, you'd said that it just felt like every time your turn came up, you had minor actions from your character that were more valuable than the towers. You didn't see the value in building these towers. It seemed like you'd do better just using your character's own things.
Yeah.
Now, go ahead. Did you have something to say?
Why don't you finish your thought?
I was going to talk about the failing of that design. And what I felt like the main failing with that is what can often be in D&D, which was it was too subtle. If I had said, hey, this combat is kind of like tower defense, you're going to have to build a pathway that funnels them in, and there are going to be unlimited enemies, you know.
Well, I think something to indicate what was coming, because honestly, we didn't really have any indication ahead of time that the encounter we're facing, because, I mean, maybe we're a little bit spoiled, because frequently the encounters we have are sort of tailored to us. We don't ever encounter, like, oh, and here's a level 30 group of red dragons, and if you come remotely close to them, it'll be a total party wipe. And you're going to have to escape. So frequently we come to an encounter and we say, oh, we can probably handle this because we're getting thrown at it. It's a little bit of a metagame sort of aspect. So we see a regular encounter and there's a couple of off things in it, but if you say, this looks like too big of a fight, the forces are overwhelming and you will not be able to do it with just your powers alone. You will have to rely on the defenses of the ship. Somehow that getting thrown in there, like, you're gauging these defenses, they're coming in too fast. Somehow to, like, say, okay, this is not something that you can do just with your powers, because that was kind of the flavor we had. Like, Ren had his good AoE stuff, I had my whetstone on, and we think, okay, we have a lot of guys coming in, but we can probably handle it. And that was the vibe, I think, that first session.
On that note, I think you're right on with more explicit knowledge being given to the player, just particularly when it's something new, because we can only approach a situation with what we know from previous
Certainly.
Experiences. And when you're throwing a new mechanic at us, like tower defense or whatever it is, we're not going to see it the way you see it because we didn't design the session. We're going to... All that we can do is observe it in the context of everything else that we've experienced. Which means for the DM, you have to be almost too explicit.
Yes.
Well, and I
think hinting is important, and you can't over-hint. You just have to do it in the right order.
I think that if it were done like Sam just said, where you were saying, okay, so you're in this room, and maybe let it go a round, or even two rounds, before, and if we're not getting, then you say, okay, now they're really starting to come in, and you can use an NPC, and Frida says, we're going to have to start putting up walls or something, because this is going to overrun us. Or, you know, just
That's
use an NPC.
Yeah.
It doesn't. You don't have to explicitly say,
this is
a tower defense, you're going to have
yes.
to start doing
well,
this.
Well, right, of course.
Well, yeah, but part of the problem is that we don't do, it, with us specifically, we don't do a whole lot of puzzle encounters. A lot of our encounters, like Sam said, are kind of tailored to us isn't really the right word, but
they definitely are tailored, but
go in, kill stuff, and you can probably pull it off. So, you know, it would be like if we were a very puzzle heavy group, if you just had a thing, I could see it being the total opposite, where all you have to do is just go kill these guys, and we're sitting here going, okay, are there any buttons we can push on the wall? Okay, are there any trap doors? And when it's really like, no, you're just supposed to just nuke these guys. And so it's because we don't do as many of them, we weren't used to that, and we
yeah.
thought, okay, there'll be a couple waves, we can kill them. And so when it's something that comes out of, that's not the norm, hints, I think, are going to be a better way to roll with it.
Which basically all comes back to everybody saying they need more direction. Need
well,
hints.
Well, how long
need...
are you going to let us... hit our head against a wall, basically.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and basically...
It depends if it's a gimmick fight or not.
That combat got... And this was certainly a gimmick fight, and you guys didn't see the value of the gimmick. The other problem I had was I came at it from a certain angle. I thought, okay, I want it to be tower defense. How can I make it tower defense? I know. I'll give them, like, 7 different powers they can
yeah.
use, and I wrote up the whole
Small.
Thing and used the power creator software I have and printed it out for you. And for me... I look at the document and I go, okay, I get it. Look, here's how you build the walls. You got slowing turrets. You got area effect turrets. You got direct shot turrets. You got healing turrets. And all this stuff, it's clearly tower defense. But when I gave you the piece of paper, I think you didn't see... You would look at it and go, okay, there's all these different mechanics, but it doesn't scream to you tower defense, which
yeah.
doesn't make you think that way. So you're just thinking, oh, it's some alternate ways we can use
exactly.
this fight. Alternate, not...
yeah, exactly.
What you need to do.
Yeah. And what it's like you said, once you said tower defense, we were like, woo! And we knew exactly what to do.
Because, yeah, the combat got split into 2 sessions, and in between session, I was like, yeah, it's supposed to be kind of a tower defense thing. And the next session, you came in and did the tower defense thing of Sam had looked at the 8x8 square and figured out how to make a maze that required the most number of possible things to get through.
Yeah.
Did you have something to say, Kaelin?
Yeah.
Just speak.
Well,
just speak.
I don't like interrupting, so...
Just go ahead and speak up. I don't want to call
interrupt
on...
You.
I don't want to call on people.
Well, just acknowledge I'm...
Go ahead.
Would you say that this was a case, perhaps, of the designer having all the fun?
Certainly. Yes. The quote that my dad likes to use a lot is, sometimes the programmer's having all the fun, or the designer in this case, sometimes the... computer's having all the fun, sometimes the player's having all the fun. And what we want is for the player to have all the fun. And in this case, it was me, the designer, that got to have all the fun, because I made up this whole cool thing, and I came up with all these complicated mechanics, and I threw it at you guys, and it was just... Especially in combat, you got so much... You got a whole like 6 or 7 pages of your character sheet, and I've just given you another page. And to you, it's just another page of powers.
Yeah.
Not like, this is the central mechanic.
Especially since we roll pretty fast on the combat. We, like, okay, what are you going to do? Here's your turn. Move on to the next person. There's not a whole lot of the traditional, okay, so we're going to sit here for 30 minutes and debate what who's going to do what.
So what would you have done differently?
I certainly would have put... I would have had Frida, you know, because she was talking to you over, like, the communication thing. She should have, like, made it pretty explicit. Like, hey, you're in the defense room. It looks like there are thousands of guys coming. You just gotta, set up these defenses to stem them off forever. Make it clear that, like, this isn't a fight that you can just fight round after round. And then say, hey, you know, you gotta use the barricades. Create a path. Create a path. And she could say that. And then if you're still not getting it, be like, look, they're gonna swarm you from all directions. You gotta use the walls thing. And then make it a little more explicit what it is. Basically, just use her to tell you. Use the NPCs, because that's a very in-character way.
Would you still keep that many powers?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I probably would have simplified it so that it didn't appear as a bunch of powers. Maybe reduce it down to just a couple.
Yeah.
Or format it in a different way. I mean, I made them look like powers, and then to you it just looks like, you know, more options of powers. Perhaps formatting it in a different way that was confusing. Which leads into the puzzle element that was in today's session, in our episode 81 that we just played. And just, I want to hear from you. What were your thoughts on this, like, clearly puzzle thing that was going on? What were you...
I think the idea of seeing the beam and the crystals, I think everyone pretty quickly got the idea that direct the beam into the crystals to make it do something. It was probably took a little bit longer to figure out
what that was.
Direct it at maybe the altar and to open a portal. That took a little while to figure out. I mean, we were pretty clear to point it at something, but without knowing what it did, that was the big fear.
And that is...
We spent a couple things actually trying to figure out what it did. I think it would have just been better if you had just said, it looks like it's a portal creation mechanism, and opening this will get you where you need to go.
Or if Ren could have done an arcana check, oh, it's some sort of portal magic related something.
Well, Aurora did a big dungeoneering check.
Yeah.
It gets into what you were saying before of just how much should the DM...
I mean, let us flail around for a little while.
I bumped into the same thing last week when I was DMing, and I had a chess puzzle, and they weren't getting it. And so each time they were doing something, I had to get a little bit more
explicit,
blunt about what you're supposed to do. And so after three or four checks of them not getting it, all of a sudden I got pretty blunt, and then they were like, oh, okay. And so you could just do that. And it's the same kind of thing. I mean, we did a lot of checks that didn't really go anywhere, do anything, and then we were like, well, we might as well just do this, but we beat around the bush a lot, and perhaps if we had done more checks, or if you had given us a little bit more, I don't know.
I completely agree. The problem seemed to be, from my perspective, that you guys, I mean, it was, the puzzle was clearly a classic mirror light puzzle, you know, there's a beam of light, you can reflect it in different ways, and again, the way I envisioned it going was not how it went down at all, but it was interesting the way you guys handled it. The problem seemed to be that you saw that this is something you could do, but what actually happens? And then you ended up completely leaving the room, going elsewhere to be like, look, this, as you guys said, this might be a bomb. It might blow up the entire place. So clearly framing it that, look, this is how you advance. There's a puzzle. You need to solve it to advance. And maybe laying it out fairly explicitly. I mean, don't have to say it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But making it clear so that the players know that, like, look,
yeah,
have fun solving this.
Here we go.
So that you can go to the next
area.
On that note,
I'm just curious. Because we don't do puzzles very often, and I haven't seen too much reaction quite yet, I'm wondering, between the two of you, how fun are puzzles?
This
kind of explicit puzzle, like, do you have fun when you do it?
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I mean, the sort of aha moment when you figure out what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's, I mean, if puzzles weren't fun, they wouldn't be used quite so much, I think.
Some people enjoy them more than others, though, so I'm just kind of curious, like, from your point of view, is that a fun element in D&D? Do you like it?
I like it. Just just killing stuff is fun. But at the same time, it gets kind of old because it's the same powers over and over again, and yeah, you get to kill stuff in fun and new flavor ways, but getting to figure out a puzzle, it just uses your brain in a different way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it was all puzzle all the time, that would maybe get a little bit boring too.
Important.
But getting one thrown in occasionally, I enjoy it because it forces you to actually think a little bit instead of just being like, okay, we have to kill everything in this room.
Yeah, it's certainly a new thing that I've been trying recently. Tower Defense was kind of the first one. This was more of a different kind of puzzle, because obviously a bunch of the puzzle was outside of combat. It was just freeform, let you figure it out.
Yeah, it kind of seemed to me a little more the classic D&D puzzle, like dungeon
delving.
There's a pit
this
of acid.
This is a perfect place for it,
how
too.
Do you get across the pit
in,
of acid, that sort of thing.
And it's not something we've done very much in our entire campaign at all.
No.
We've done very little puzzle solving. The difference with puzzle solving is that it's very much about the players solving a puzzle and not the characters solving a puzzle.
It's true.
Because, I mean, if it's just the characters solving a puzzle, you know, you could just, it would be like, oh, well, I'm just going to keep rolling checks and my character is smart and I'll wait for the DM to tell me how to solve the puzzle when my character figures it out. But that's not, you know, really what's going on. It's these kinds of puzzles. It's the players are all looking at it trying to solve it, which also makes it very difficult to design.
Sort of on the subject of design and difficulty, I had a thought about the two side rooms that we kind of explored, but not really.
We've explored them fully.
Well, what I mean is we didn't really, because all you basically said was, there's nothing there. Because we really didn't get anything from them. I was just wondering, did you consider those red herrings, or was there perhaps something more you wanted to do with them?
No, it was just more, fleshing out the temple. It's not just two rooms. There's more there, but it's uneventful. It's just the living quarters.
If that were the case, then I would have rather that been established immediately upon finding the stairs, so that
you didn't waste time going all the way back to them.
Yeah, because it felt like a waste of time to me, and it frustrated me that we were doing it.
It's kind of the pull between being on a roller coaster sort of narrative versus being able to explore, because a lot of times you're exploring some dungeon. There are dead ends. There are unproductive rooms, and if you don't have any of those, then it's like, okay, we go to the next room, and this is clearly the next thing that happens, and then this is the next thing that happens, and then this is the next thing that happens. Then it doesn't really, I don't know, it has a different feel.
I don't want it to be linear at all. What I feel like is the exploration should always be rewarded somehow, even if that's via information that shows you where you should be going. And
yeah,
it sort of did that, but it took a while to get there.
It would have been wise for me to put, when you guys went back to go explore the underbelly, which I just basically kind of magicked away and said, you know, there's nothing down there. Should have given, you know, like, oh, you search and you get some information. You find out some notes about how that room works, and you would learn that, oh, that room is the portal to the inner part.
Yeah, something like that.
In retrospect, that would have been a better way to do it. And that's a good point to always make reward creativity, reward exploration.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it can be hard to think on your feet and figure out how to reward it, without it being like, you get 1,000 gold.
Yeah. Had you had different plans if we had gone and checked down at the bottom first?
No,
I mean, granted, you always have different plans.
It was just there to make it symmetrical with the other thing. I didn't have anything else planned for it. But I just realized now that that's what I should have done when you went down there, was give you a reward. You guys were having trouble solving the puzzle. You didn't know what it was for. That was my opportunity to give you
to drop
more hints. Of a solution, drop some major hints. And that would have been a good idea.
Yeah. Well,
Melek served that purpose briefly.
Well, that's why I brought Melek in. Melek was originally slated in my plans to come in after the fight. After the fight with all the guards here.
Mm-hmm.
But then decided to bring him in early because I thought, oh, I can use him to kind of... You guys are hitting your head against the wall, not sure what to do. So you used him to try to...
Which is funny, since he really didn't know anything about the room.
He gave the key piece that it was a portal.
Yeah.
That this was how you get to the next area. And he also gave kind
really
of another incentive to move forward, which
that
is, hey, Aurum is in there.
That was the big issue. Here was a big mechanism. We don't know what it does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he should have been even more explicit about it. The funny thing is, you guys partially solved step 2 of the puzzle before before completing step one of the puzzle. The original idea was going to be you point the laser thing at that marker above the door, and that's what brings the guards in. But the guards are all powered up from these crystals, and you quickly realize, oh, you've got to it's not just putting the beam in one spot. You got to bounce the beam all over the place. But you guys had really investigated the crystals and figured those out, and even pre-positioned them and got the laser pointing all set up.
Good job, Ren.
So that the puzzle was half solved by the time the combat started out. The intention was to be, you're going to have to adjust all like five of those things during combat to finish it up, which is why
that's rewarding. Good
kind of the way the whole thing ended early was because you had pre-set it up. It was already half solved. I think it worked okay. That's kind of a neat thing. That's the whole fun of D&D is, right, that you can end up solving something in different ways or completely bypassing a challenge because of ingenuity, which is sort of what happened here by accident, or through Ren's incessant curiosity about what they were for.
Which is very rewarding.
Sometimes.
I find Ren's curiosity...
Sometimes.
But yeah, puzzles, man. They're great, and I want to use more of them. And it's gonna be
great.
It's gonna be
so the challenge
is struggle moving forward.
Is leaving enough breadcrumbs so that the group knows what to do. So it's not just like, okay, do you go to a room? What do you do? It's like, okay, what's in the room?
I will tell you.
And I don't want to feel like I'm basically like being like
it's trying to find the right balance. It's
giving
hard.
You hints over and over and over again because clearly my hints are too small. Because then it feels like I'm just kind of telling you how to solve it, and that's no fun for anybody.
Like, go towards this thing. Go towards.
You know?
I will tell you that from a DM standpoint, and granted, I don't have much experience specifically one time, but that was one of the hardest parts. Was I wanted to have some kind of a puzzle, and that was kind of hard for me to actually come up with puzzles. And that, if you want to do more of them, I feel like that's kind of a challenge, unless you've got some specific source that you can go to for puzzle ideas, but that was a trickier part.
Just coming up with a puzzle?
Just coming up with puzzles.
Well, there are lots of different kinds
of
puzzles.
There are lots of puzzle resources online. D&D has been around a long time. Puzzles have always been a big aspect of D&D. There are entire books that are like D&D puzzles.
Yeah.
That I may go to draw upon.
You can also, like Greg was inspired by a game that is not traditionally a puzzle in that sense when you use tower defense.
Oh, yeah.
That's a puzzle,
yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Anything that uses strategy can be
adapted. I like building them into combat because I think it's really neat. The problem with building it into combat is it's extra challenging.
It's more distracting.
Because time is
really.
So precious during combat. You only get your turn every once in a while, and there's so little that you can do on each of your turns that if it's like
it's
a five step
no
puzzle.
It's almost no
yeah,
incentive.
Yeah, it's a five
to,
step puzzle. It's really hard to do. In you can't, I guess what the bigger problem is, you can't experiment in combat puzzle. There's not enough time.
Yeah.
If I could also say, I wasn't really clear on what was happening every time that we connected a beam to one of the crystals.
I gotta admit, the whole them being powered up, I wasn't really sure how to deactivate the power up. It's like, oh, you hit one of them. Oh, now they're less powerful. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, see, again, it was just not explicit
bit.
Enough. Well, all right, look, my second major puzzle thing, okay, guys? But it's good feedback. It's interesting. It's all about making it more explicit, which oftentimes means make the flavor more explicit.
Better.
Make it,
yeah.
Like,
better
this was kind of weird. Like, why is there this black beam coming out of the pool for no reason? And why would it be the way that it opens the thing? If it was more, you know, clear that, like, there's a talking head and he's asking you a riddle. Like,
yeah,
I mean, obviously that's the more, like...
There's a sphinx in the corner.
Obvious.
There's two guys. One of them always lies. One of them always tells the truth.
Yeah.
There are four boys.
And so that'll just be something I'll have to work on going forward.
Yeah.
Because I want to do more puzzles.
Next time, maybe, just a thought, try going the other way. Try being way too explicit. And just see if you can find your baseline.
And honestly, if it's too explicit, that's probably still fun. Not explicit enough, that's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If it's too explicit, you'll breeze over it really quickly. It won't waste any time. It'll be like, oh, that was kind of easy. But because it won't waste time, it won't feel frustrating.
Yeah.
It'll at the worst be frustrating to
it's
me
calibration.
That
calibration.
That my puzzle got finished too early. So.
Agreed.
Don't have all the fun.
Yeah, I'll try not to have all the fun. I wanted to ask, switching gears a little bit.
Okay.
I wanted to ask... Lincoln, you DM'd for the first time last week. You've been playing for 2 years now.
Is that how long it's been?
It's been 2 years. Since you guys joined the group. We've been broadcasting for a year and a half. This was Lincoln's first role-playing game ever. So first group, first campaign, first character, all over the last 2 years. You're lucky to have the first time you play D&D to get a campaign that is going for 2 years and running. Most of us have had to suffer through countless campaigns that have just fizzled and died because of lack of player availability or people's lives change and can't play anymore. But anyway, so you basically had two straight years of experience being a player and then DM'd your very first game last week. And it's actually Thursday night's actual play episode 80 is Lincoln's first successful attempt at DMing.
His first attempt, period.
I have not listened to it yet.
Be gentle if you listen to it.
Lincoln DM'd because Kaelin and I were at PAX, but Kaelin listened to the whole thing because she processed it. I'm curious to know how it went. How'd you like it? What?
I personally, from the DM seat, I had a great time.
How's it different from the player?
It was different because even though I had thought about it for like 2 weeks, and it was like Greg and I talked about it, and when you are thinking about what you're going to do that much ahead of time, you can plan a lot. You can think of all the different scenarios, the way things could potentially go, and you can think out a lot of, you know, what ifs. And so you don't have to think on your toes as much. But there still was some of that where I had to think on my toes. And that was perhaps the most challenging because, even though I've been doing this now for 2 years and role-playing with you guys, I'm no Eric. I mean, Eric can just spout for like hours on end if he wanted to.
Yeah, if he didn't stop.
Hey, I'm no Eric either.
Yeah, and so for me to think on my toes like that, I really have to.
Well, you have a lot of pre-written stuff,
and and I had pre-written stuff and things like that. But that was one of my biggest challenges. The other one was I didn't know how many monsters to throw in. I didn't know what levels to make them or anything because I had never done this. And so
the game balance. Yeah, that's a whole separate
and that's
challenge.
A whole other challenge. And so I talked to Greg a bit. I read over the Dungeon Master's Guide 1 and 2. Like, for example, the monsters that I had picked. Greg, after I kind of showed him a little bit what I was thinking, and he said, "Well, those monsters they're from an old." You know, when 4th edition first came out, they'd kind of revamped these, and Monster Vault 3, you might want to throw these at them. I had no idea. And so that was one of the trickiest parts for me, was just thinking of things on the fly and designing the encounters. But, I mean, that's DMing. But
I'm a little curious.
Yeah, balancing encounters seems like it'd be tricky, because it's not just like, and how many monsters should it be? Because it depends a lot on your group.
Well, yeah, and
you had a newbie on your group too, right? Someone who had
We had Ed. It was his second time doing 4E. He did the other delve we did.
But if you listen to it, you can hear, like, for example, and this is a spoiler, but for the
easy,
whatever. Kidding. So for the dragon encounter at the end, I had some minions, and the minions got dusted. I mean, I didn't have enough of them in there. They were a non-issue. It was just more of like they were swatting flies and get out of here while they continued to wail away on the dragon. Because I had never made one. I didn't know what they were going to do. And so...
How many minions did you put in?
I think there were like six.
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 That's not enough. At these levels,
six are like
minions,
per guy.
Put like 25
well, they were only level
well,
eight,
they were
though.
Late.
Oh, okay.
The characters were only level
eight.
We
had a controller, though, and he had the double attack at will.
And that was the irritating thing, is that Luke, as a controller, basically locked them down and could move them as a group wherever he wanted to, and I couldn't do anything because he had them stuck.
Minions partially exist to make controllers feel badass. So they did their job.
Yeah.
Minions were actually something I struggled with for a long time when we were first playing 4th edition. They're a new concept to 4th, and I didn't like them at all because I had that same experience. I thought, I put minions in and they die instantly and they don't do anything. What's the point? Well, it didn't occur to me that's the point. Well, they flesh out the combat. They make it. There's more stuff there.
And after getting some feedback
also, if
too.
If something bad happens at the end when you kill one of them.
Oh yeah. Well, that's the more advanced minions do that.
Well, and after getting some feedback too. I realized, and you do a lot of this too, as a DM with minions, a lot of the minions, I mean, it's they go in and they swarm and they hit kind of hard right off the bat. And it's kind of the sucker punch is the wrong word, but they kind of soften things up a little bit, and then you kind of, and they're gone. But that's what I heard from a lot of people, is that if you're only going to have one or two minions come in at a time, then it's like, it's stupid. But if you have,
a horde,
you know, 20 of them all of a sudden descend upon your guys right off the bat when the encounter starts, then they're more of a force to be reckoned with.
Were those Gruz minions?
So,
In that last fight, Gruz, they were minion-like, but they were not. They didn't have attacks.
I'm curious, Lincoln, as a new DM, and you're kind of learning how to lead your players, was there ever a time where you felt frustrated
or angry
at your players?
During the...
Like I do every week.
Yeah, you really do, dude.
During the chess... skill challenge, which was the first, there was three encounters, and it was the first encounter, I was getting really frustrated that the group wasn't getting it. And it was like we just talked about, and it was like, okay, how goddamn explicit do I have to be here as to what you have to do? And that was hard, and it just required more prodding and more, you know, dropping hints that are getting more and more blunt. And that was the most frustrating part, was when I had... And it was like Greg just said, you have a vision, and it makes perfect sense in your head, and you're like, how the heck are you guys not seeing this?
You missed this.
And
that was... It's the same thing, you know.
That was the most frustrating part. The other frustrating part was when you got...
Was it the end of the combat, or no?
Well, time constraints were frustrating to me, because I wanted to actually finish the delve. Because we had never actually done a delve that we finished the whole thing. Every time we do one, it always ends up going way longer than we think it's going to. So I was forced to make the hard decision of, okay, well, do I let this encounter play out, but then we're going to run over, or do I just end it? And so I ended up with both of the combat encounters, when it became pretty clear, at least in my mind, that the group was going to win, I said, and I made them flavor it, but I basically just magicked away the enemies. And
that's a good thing to do.
And but at the same time, from a player standpoint, I know how fun
it is.
It is
a little bit more satisfying to actually
kill something.
Yeah.
And so it was hard, because I was like, you know, I really don't want to just make them go away, but I want to keep this moving.
Which would you rather do? Go over as a player, overtime, to kill your guys, or finish it up quickly for efficiency's sake? Like, does it matter on like how long the combat's been going? Perhaps it's like battle fatigue?
Well, when it's...
Do you just get sick of it?
When it's something like us, where we have an ongoing campaign, it doesn't really matter, because, we only got to 2 out of 3, I can throw the third one in next week. But when it's just a one-nighter, then I felt, you know... For the whole story arc to end and stuff like that, I wanted that to happen more than have the combat drag on, which is why I ended up doing what I did.
I can't believe you planned to have 2 combat encounters, man. I counseled against that.
Ambitious.
We've never, I don't think, in our entire year and a half of broadcasting, have had 2 combat encounters.
Well, I thought that it was going to go faster because... I thought it was going to move along faster because... There wasn't a whole lot of exploration you could do. It was a very roller coaster, handheld. You go to this room, then you go to this room, then you go to this room.
Yeah.
I thought they would get the chess thing faster.
I think you had a noob, and that was what slowed it down.
I don't know.
The chess thing took longer. Honestly, the fire elemental fight you had before took longer,
that
too.
Was
because you had one kind of heavy guy.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't super heavy, but he was a little heavier. And then you had like eight dudes who, my first impression, I was guessing they were going to be minions, but then they weren't. So it was like, whoa, 8 guys that actually have hit points are going to take a lot of hits. That's going to take a long time
to get the hits out. They were pretty squishy, though.
They're pretty squishy, but it's still, I don't know, just...
I know, it's still...
What about, like, 2 hit minions?
Health per round.
Nah, well, just as far as attacks that can get done,
like,
eight guys that have hit points, I hit one at least 2-3 times. We only had one straight-up striker in the group. So, yeah. Like, as far as number of rounds to kill that many, it's going to take a long time.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it was all just... Because it was my first time and I didn't know. So,
yeah.
Any people that listen to it and want to offer, you know,
mm-hmm.
advice or...
Insight?
Constructive criticism or insight.
Or just call them an ass.
Or yeah. regular
or just
criticism.
Call me an ass.
Again, that's Thursday night's episode 80.
Yeah.
Was Lincoln's first DMing.
It was fun, though. I would recommend
well, cool.
anyone doing it that hasn't done it.
So you should say that players should try their hand at DMing.
You
I mean, I would
should.
Absolutely say that.
I think I'm probably going to try next.
You should. And
if there's ever an opportunity.
Next time I'm gone.
You're all going to go down.
And my biggest piece of advice is don't just wing it. Even if you take a night or two before to plan something out,
mm-hmm.
it makes a big difference. Because not having to come up with stuff on the fly makes it a lot better in my or it, not better but more comfortable for you at least as a first timer.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting towards the end of our time here.
Be prepared.
I wanted to
questions?
To at least ask a question or two. Zarfian was saying in the chat he was asking, do you find it difficult to run games or play in the game with such powerful characters? And do you prefer to keep upping the power of the opponents, or would you prefer to have a point where new characters back at lower levels be made? I think that's kind of a question that can be... You can go at that from a couple different angles. There's powerful characters as far as the power goes, you know, actual mechanics strength. And I think, to basically kind of hand-wave that part of the question away, 4th edition really makes it where you don't have to worry about that so much.
Mm-hmm.
They...
Mm-hmm.
The game is balanced from 1 to 30. It's not like 3rd and 2nd.
Crazy.
I actually don't know about 1st enough. But where the game kind of got completely out of control, unbalanced at higher levels. There's a sweet spot in 3rd edition at like level 8. At level 6 to 8 where it's like best, but then as you get higher level, the wizards become so powerful that it's hard to create mechanics that are satisfying for all players across the board. But 4th edition, playing... a combat at level 25 and playing a combat at level 10 as far as making sure that the mechanics are balanced and that it's an interesting tactical experience. It's going to be more complicated at 25 by far. There's more the
six
monsters,
six pages of powers
the monsters do far more powerful and complex things that you have to figure out how to counter. So I don't want to say that, you know, the game feels the same at 25 than it does at 10. It certainly doesn't. It's one of the things that some people complain about 4th edition, but I don't think those people have really played through all the levels. But you don't really have to change so much in the way that you plan the session. So that's part of the question. I think a more interesting angle to take that question is about the story.
Mm-hmm. I think that's more...
If you go by... You certainly don't have to have Epic Tier be any, flavor-wise, that much more powerful than Heroic Tier. You can flavor
bigger
however
dungeons.
You want. But in our campaign, we are doing it more the way that the DMG suggests you can do, which is Epic Tier means gods and devils and demons and planeswalking and you're, you know, ultra-powerful, the most powerful creatures on all of the planes, and, you know, at level 30, that's the level at which you could take on the gods, or even stat-blocked out at level, like, 32, right?
Yeah.
So, I can certainly say that trying to make a story that is suitably epic for Epic Tier is an exceptional challenge.
Oh, yeah.
It's very difficult to come up with reasons why you would just be fighting. Like, you five would be fighting...
Anyone.
Have a challenging fight where combat mechanics should break out, because...
who would fight
us? Because who would fight you?
Who would be
other than just
dumb?
Sending demons and devils and angels after you, which is essentially what I've done. It's a little bit tricky, but you also have the full power of Thunderstrike. You've got thousands of troops at your disposal. So... Why wouldn't it not be some sort of weird extrapolated war for everything? And coming up with excuses for that, but in a way that it still feels like that it's an actual story and believable and following your characters in a way that still makes you feel badass, taking your power away would be lame.
I think you've succeeded.
It took a lot of planning. It took a lot of brainstorming.
Here's why I think you succeeded, is because you've built everything on a narrative that already existed. this is not something brand new. Firstly, we're familiar with the story, partially because Thera's Dune, specifically, kind of end-of-the-world concept, isn't new. And we kind of dealt with it in Heroic Tier, although it was a different flavor, or a different dose, perhaps. So the fact that you were building off of that, I think it's easier to accept. Okay, yeah, we're doing this on a greater scale.
Yeah, I kind of like it, because thus far in the campaign, I'm still waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I mean,
that's just me, like...
Well, we hit the temple kind of
early. Hit the temple, but at the same time, these guys kind of seem like a little bit like pushovers. We knocked down their temple, we knocked over the big guys, now there's some orb and some demon thing, and maybe we'll get past the orb and the demon thing, and then there's something else, like... There's some challenge off... It's kind of... I don't know. It's lame Star Wars, like the Phantom Menace. Something is going on, and we are following the leads we have, but there's no, like, and that is your enemy who you must
defeat,
and you must go gather the three crystals of destiny to power the Ultra Weapon to defeat him, or something like that.
Right.
Which is a lot like what our last campaign was like. But this one's a little bit more... a little more subtle. It's like, okay, you don't know what's going on, but you know there's a cataclysm, and you're trying to find out what's happening.
That speaks to your faith in Greg's storytelling, too, because you're coming at it from this, like, okay, there's more, obviously, because this was too easy, instead of, this was too easy, Greg is a terrible storyteller.
Yes.
It's like, okay, you'll hit level 30.
The end!
It was especially fun, this may be jumping the gun a little bit,
dead.
It was especially fun, doing the Temple of Elemental Evil, because this is the Elemental Chaos's sister temple, right? Took you 10 levels, like 7 levels, in Heroic Tier to take down the first Temple of Elemental Evil. It was a huge campaign. It was a lot of work. You were fighting guys, oftentimes more powerful than you, fighting guys the whole time. And now here you are. There's another Temple of Elemental Evil, and in 2 sessions, the whole thing is being sieged and destroyed, and it looks like all the cultists are dead, and it looks like perhaps the temple is about to be just completely destroyed. And it's like, it's fun for me to get to do that because it allows me to, it's a reminder that my objective is to give you a reminder, hey, this is how powerful you are. Used to take a year and a half of game sessions
to
take down the temple.
Fast.
Now, 2 sessions.
Yeah.
You know, 3 sessions. And that's a very fun thing to get to do, to kind of try to... I want to make sure I throw things in like that. That kinds of frames how powerful you are. You fight guys that you fought before, but now you just kind of snap your fingers and they explode.
Which is great for me because...
He likes to make people explode.
The general populace probably doesn't know this, but for these guys, they know that I'm the guy that, like... In World of Warcraft, at max level, I like to go and run the really early dungeons and just one-hit everybody because it's fun.
There's satisfaction
and
there.
I know that at one point I tried to run these things and it was hard and it took forever, and then I like to go back and just dust them because it's like hot in your face. And that's kind of how I felt about doing the temple here when it turned out to be kind of a pushover and it was like, okay, we called in our troops and we nuked the hell out of the gates and pretty much just...
Other games have done that. I'm thinking specifically, I think, of Mass Effect and Dragon Age 1 had moments where you come back to an area that was hard earlier, and you basically one-shot everyone as you're getting to the main boss. It's totally obvious that the guy just... It takes one hit to kill the zombie now, where before it's like zombie, kill, kill, kill the whole time.
Uh-huh.
So you're basically striding through the battlefield as you go on to the actual fight.
Right.
And it's fun.
It's fun. It's actually fun because you're like,
I earned this.
I
made myself more powerful
by showing up
every Thursday. And by playing awesomely and developing this character.
It's just from his kind of a question, what's the machine playing at high level versus low level? It's a little bit more the feel of, I would say low level is closer to sort of zombie survival horror, where you are underpowered and you are facing overwhelming odds constantly, whereas higher level is kind of like a superhero story.
Yeah.
You have tons of powers and resources at your disposal, and you're facing, you know, all kinds of other obstacles like that. So it's a different sort of a storytelling, and there's pros for both.
The biggest problem that I have with playing high level... character character, because it's the only one I've done, but is...
such a purist.
You... If you're playing a character from level 1 to level 30...
Ooh, that's commitment.
You get... You have to fight the boredom factor, because it's the same character, and it's a long time. I mean, for us, at least, because we're so role... or flavor intensive.
That's viable.
That's it's going to have taken, you know, 3 years for some of us to do this. And that's 3 years. That's a big commitment for one character.
3 years, and you guys started at level 7.
It's
so
an emotional investment.
It's gonna be,
I didn't
probably
yeah.
4
just
years
for the record,
for the rest
I did not start
well, that's,
at level 7.
That's what I mean
yeah,
is that
Lincoln and Sam.
I started level 1. Aurora is a level 1.
Yeah,
home
and so
girl.
And that's what I'm saying. And so that's my hardest part is that
level 1 you get like one power.
Is just finding yourself, you know, just getting bored with your same characters, and you're like, ah, I've done so many encounters now with this sorcerer, I just want to do something else. And that's when having the random delve thrown in, or the thing like we
I
did...
I think that's why Eric changes his character so much.
Yeah, and that's why... But that's why I really like delves. That's why I like just taking a
yeah.
break. You
Would
know,
you...
doing the thing like we did when we went back in time, and
Ooh,
doing...
Yeah.
This, the whole session last week, where you
I
get
to say,
you just get to play something else.
I think that was one of my favorite sessions, actually, was the travel back in time delve.
That was a really fun thing to get to do, where everyone made level 10 characters and played someone else for multiple sessions, but it was still completely in fiction.
In mm-hmm. fiction.
Get to
totally.
Roleplay your own character.
And there was a mystery
living
there.
In someone else's body. There's a whole mystery of what's going on, but you also get this mechanical kind of break. You get to play someone else. That's definitely something we'll probably see come up once or twice in this tier, because I think it was a big success. You know, just at least the mechanical effect of that,
and
getting
fun.
To basically play as a different character for a few sessions, but not just as a, oh, let's do a side thing because people are bored of their characters, but in a way that's still completely furthering the story.
Yeah.
Especially since, you know, we do this podcast and kind of have a dedication to our fans to not just say, we're going to put that on hold for a month.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That would be cruel.
But like, I really do like Hugh, though. Just saying.
Oh,
well,
Hugh,
but well, but
and
like
you
I was going to say,
make Hugh again. Maybe we'll go into Hugh's past.
But like I was saying, if you're playing a high level character and it's just like, okay, this week everybody make a level 28 character and we're going to go do a delve. That it doesn't really matter. You could make it's like we said. You could make a level 30. You could make a level 10. All it means is you've got more powers to choose from. But it's at least
I
didn't play any
go
other
to
ones.
A higher level.
Yeah, it'd be rough.
Yeah, just because it's a lot to have to
it's a lot, yeah.
make and keep track of and stuff.
It'd be fun to do one at 30, though.
But
oh, yeah.
if you want to, just my advice would be, if you want to, if you're going to go from level 1 to level 30, you have to, A, pick
right.
a class that you're going to enjoy playing, and B, I would really recommend doing some kind of flavor with it, because otherwise it just
it
gets boring.
You have to commit.
Oh, you need player progression and all that.
Yeah, you have to keep it interesting.
You know, and if your
of
players
course, you
get
know
bored,
what you did you switched classes?
Yeah, you switched classes,
and that's
too.
That should be totally.
And Dan
acceptable.
Switched characters, and so did Eric. And
I mean,
Eric kind of did, but yeah,
it happens, and I think it's totally acceptable. You just have to find a will to it, like a reason, and then it's fine. You know, don't do it willy nilly, but
yeah,
but.
Yeah.
As a DM, I guess, to be aware of your players' satisfaction, whether or not, give them the opportunity, let them know it's allowed,
yeah.
if they really
right.
are feeling it.
Anyway, to wrap up, the original question about the, do you find it difficult to play characters with such high power, at least for me, designing the sessions, designing the plot, not just each individual session, but the entire arc, is very challenging. It's very tough.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to when we're going to go back, when we're done with this, we're going to go do our tour of other systems and get to tell some short stories, essentially. The short story equivalent of D&D, you know, which is like 3-session arcs. And and we plan on doing a lot of low-power stuff, maybe even high-power stuff, depending on the system, what it's best suited for. And that's going to be a lot of fun, and for me, really nice break of getting to go back to just fighting thugs.
Yeah.
In an alley.
If anyone out there has, now the word's totally escaping me, but game types.
You mean systems?
Yeah, game systems
yeah.
that they want to see
Well, that's not for a long time. We're going to take suggestions
when we get towards that,
but that's not,
not
for another year.
Not Fatal, though, sorry.
We will be Fatal will be one of the systems
we'll
do
a
tour.
We'll do a character creation of that.
Use every stat once.
Oh, God.
Anyway, yeah, we will be doing a tour of systems. No. We'll do some Dogs in the Vineyard. We'll do some Pathfinder. We'll do some...
Feng Shui?
We'll find... Maybe.
Oh, come
we'll
on.
Find,
feng
there are a million secret. Systems. We'll figure it out. But that's not for a year.
Dogs
we don't
vineyard.
Even need to think
Everyone of, who has not checked out Dogs in the Vineyard
very,
should all do so.
Very good system. Very fun.
Yeah, check it out. That's a really good indie one.
Anyway, so... we're an hour, so I think... Okay. Is any last thing someone wanted to say about what we were just talking?
D&D is awesome.
D&D is awesome. And with that, we're going to wrap up the podcast. As always, come to ThursdayNights.com. It's where you can see our actual play podcast as well as this roundtable podcast. You can subscribe to either or both. And go to our forums. Leave us feedback. Talk to us. Give us topics to talk about. Whatever you want to do. Or find us on Twitter or Facebook. Thursday Nights.
We're kind of attention whores.
And we'll see you...
7 o'clock Pacific Standard Time.
Next week.
Actually,
if you want to watch us live, come. 7 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Pacific Observed Time.
We always say
whatever the time it is in California.
What time is it in California? That's the only time that matters.
Yes. At 7 p.m. That's when we broadcast live each week on Twitch TV / Thursday Nights.
Well, that might change. But
so.
You never know.
Yeah. We will see you later.
Thank you. Bye.
Do, 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 do. This is the outro.